It is Saturday, December 20th, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, the week in geek news, plus suggestions for geek gifts from the geeks, and of course, your questions and comments about technology.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell, and in the air room we have Ben Jaffe. He's a freelance media dude, and it looks like you're a bit of a baker as well.
Yes, indeed. I have cookies.
Pass them out, man.
Not for listeners, I'm sorry.
Why not?
We can't transmit cookies to the airwaves yet.
How many extra cookies do you have?
In the next 10 years, we'll be able to do it.
That's why the web is superior to radio.
How many extra cookies?
The web has cookies.
Actually, if we report the technology, it'll work.
Thank you, Miles, for that laugh.
I have...
I'll be here all week.
I have six cookies.
You have six cookies. So... for one special listener, they can come in. Did you offer one to Dawn?
I didn't.
Oh, run to the door and offer one to Dawn.
Right now?
Sure, what the heck. I'll introduce the other geeks.
We don't need you.
Yeah, we don't need you for this.
don't forget about Rick.
Miles Elam, student programmer and political junkie. Hey, Miles.
Good morning.
We have Sean Cleveland. Sean is a senior technical marketing manager at NVIDIA.
Yeah, at least for now. Thanks.
And with this, wait, is that some horrible...
with this economy, who knows, right?
That's true. Ryder Brooks, support engineer at Sun Microsystems. Morning, Ryder.
Good morning.
Well, I haven't seen you for a while, Ryder, but you were here last week, and I wasn't. I had a great time in Mexico. Did notice some geeky things, but nothing I thought was really great for the radio, so I'll just leave it at that. Let's go ahead and get into the geek news. Miles, let's start with you.
And looking for...
Oh, wait. Ben, did you catch her? Did you catch Dawn?
I didn't catch Dawn. She's somewhere... apparently, she's somewhere around the station, but I gave one to Rick.
Oh, good. Rick's the guy that answers our phones every week, and he's right now waiting, but we're not going to invite people for another 20 minutes.
You know, it's funny, though. There's a 9 or 10 second delay. I ran out there just as we were saying, you should give one to Rick.
So you were in two places at once.
I actually gave it. Yeah, exactly. I gave him the cookie, like, as that was
that's great.
Over the air.
Miles,
instant
go.
Gratification. He's like, that was quick.
Can I do a news story?
Yes, you may.
I'm just curious. Are you sure? I'm just kidding.
All right, Sean, your turn.
Touch-based devices, handheld devices, such as the iPhone, have become far more common. Mm-hmm. However, one of the issues with them is the fact that your finger is in the way while you're trying to use that device. What a group has done is make a prototype that you touch from the rear of the device, not from the front of the device.
So you reach from behind.
Yes, that's exactly what you're doing.
Wow.
The idea being that even if you have fat fingers, that because you can see where the point is being hit, because you're touching the back of the screen where you're not looking, you're able to hit like millimeter-sized points as opposed to missing the items, which I regularly do on my iPhone when I'm clicking on links.
Do you see your fingers through the screen? Is it a?
Some of the devices they were demoing did have what seemed to be a translucence. I don't know whether or not it was the device that was translucent.
But if your finger is behind the screen and right on the screen is a representation of a point, like a mouse pointer, mm-hmm. then it's pretty easy to see what's going on.
That's exactly what happens.
But that wouldn't exactly work on an iPhone, because an iPhone you actually have to come over and you have to push down right on the spot. And if your finger's behind, you wouldn't see where the spot was until you're already touching the sensor. So you'd have to have a second button that would denote pushing.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, Apple's got some patent stuff that they're putting in that actually has proximity sensors on their touchscreen. So as you approach it, it can actually sense it without
right.
you actually
touching it. And maybe even project an image of your
finger. So, you know, that could easily be incorporated.
Well, just one thing here that I think the biggest issue is that you couldn't put electronics behind the screen if you're going to see through the screen.
Right, so where's all the stuff
going? Where's the electronics going to go?
But that's only the see-through. I don't really care about seeing my fingers. I know what they look like, and I pretty much know where my finger is. So it's okay for it to be opaque, as long as you give me some representation of where the actual
right, but the see-through thing is more along the lines of there are sensors on the back, and it shows you the representation of where your finger is. Yeah. It just happens to fit the outline of what your finger looks like, even though it's not actually translucent.
Right.
Even if it's not, I mean, look at the back of your phone is filled with electronics behind the screen.
Right, so the screen and the sensor are decoupled if it's opaque. So you could have it, you know, 15 feet away.
I really think it would work if you couldn't see through the to your finger what you're touching.
I use drawing pads all the time. I'm looking at the screen and I'm using my hand down below. I don't see my hand drawing with a pen.
Yeah, go
onto shows up on the screen.
Yeah, go onto our site. We have a link to the story and it has a video that shows it in action. You can actually see
the keyboard. The keyboard on the iPhone is horrible. And you really think it's going to be easier?
So says the guy who doesn't own an iPhone. However, the rest of us who do are like,
we get used to the.
There's a reason why I don't own an iPhone.
No, I don't like writing on it. Still, I'm really good at the keyboard now. I don't make mistakes, but I don't like writing like a keyboard. I do a lot of reading on my iPhone.
Yeah, I take my class notes on my iPhone. That's where I take my notes. And
let's go on to the next news story, which I'd like Sean to handle. Go for it, man. Thank you, Miles.
Apple's pulling out of Macworld. That was a big story this last week. They say that they've been planning to do this for a while, actually. But, of course, there are people out there wondering why they're doing this. And it could be because of Steve Jobs' health. Nobody really knows. But I'm just really surprised because that is just such a huge news event when it happens.
That's when the big keynote happens and they announce
all
new products.
And, they're always very secretive about what happens there. And when Steve Jobs is on stage, he really takes advantage of that.
Right.
That's where the live blog, right? People started doing the live blogs at Macworld.
You were talking, Sean, about earlier before the show that he says, when he says, oh, and there's one more thing that's worth some value.
So I heard just, through...
Through the grapevine.
Through the grapevine. That's a good way to put it. That when he says just one more thing on stage.
At the end of the keynote.
End of the keynote. That moment is worth hundreds of millions of dollars in advertising, marketing dollars.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people waiting for that.
I thought the thing that was strange about this is that I always thought of Macworld as Apple's show. I mean, sure, they don't, there's some company that runs it and stuff, but I always think of it as their show. The idea of Apple not being there is kind of ridiculous.
And, a lot of people are pulling out, supposedly, because Apple's not going to be there.
Right. Because, that's a big draw. And seeing the new hardware, that's the biggest thing that happens. You happen to see a bunch of developers as well. Now, are they going to be for
this one? They're
going to
be there, yeah.
Okay, so this is the last one.
Yeah, although,
this is the last
although one. Steve, they announced that Steve Jobs would not be doing a
keynote. Jobs won't be doing the...
It's set for January 5th through the 9th at Moscone Center in San Francisco. Last year's last year's convention attracted around 44,000 people. Steve Jobs will not be doing the keynote this time.
It's going to be Phil Schiller, who's the senior vice. I always get these titles wrong, but something like senior vice president of.
When they did the press announcement, he did a lot of it.
He's also done parts of keynotes in the past.
Right.
Several keynotes,
it's
in
like
fact.
Jobs has been slowly kind of teaching him the ropes or like passing the torch to him.
Or weaning all of the keynote viewers off of him, himself.
Yeah. All right, thank you very much for that, Sean.
God, they spend convention goers spend around $26 million in San Francisco. That's what they spent last year.
Oh, so it's
they're expecting 500 exhibitors this year. And of course, the Macworld has launched the iMac, the iBook, iTunes, Safari, Intel Macs, and the iPhone.
Yeah, they've done a lot of stuff on this show.
Yeah, so this is going to hurt the economy when it's on a downturn. I mean, come on, Apple, where's your patriotism?
Well, of course, it's not this year, it's the next year, and the economy will totally be fine next year.
So, these things are predictable.
Totally. Let's go to the next news story.
Although, did you hear that they finally figured out that we are in a recession, that story? But it started, December.
January 2007. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. It's the signs were there. It's just nobody saw it coming, right? Until
Well, recession is defined by a certain.
I know.
Okay. Anyway, we're going. We're not a talk show like that. News, Ben.
Not that kind. So I have some sad news for a lot of geeks and Star Trek fans out there.
Major we're out Barrett, of cookies.
No. Major Barrett Roddenberry has passed away, and she was 76, and it was of leukemia. And so for those who don't know, she was extremely involved in basically everything Star Trek was about. She played a character in the original series, Nurse Christine Chapel. She played actually she's the voice of the computer voice. Throughout
and
all
the movies,
ships.
All the shows.
Yeah, it's actually only four movies. I think it's the I'm not positive on this, but I think from my own memory, it's the last four, which are the ones that take place in the Next Generation universe.
Right. I thought she's been on like every...
And then she's been indirectly or directly, either as the computer voice or a character, on every one of the television shows, yeah. As the computer voice.
But not
voice.
The original one.
Yes.
Computer voice oh
yeah,
series,
that's true.
Was she?
No, I don't think.
No, it was a male voice a lot of times.
It was this weird male voice. I'm not sure if she was at any point, but
she was the nurse.
I think she was just the nurse. And then she also played Loxana Troy, which is a hilarious character, and she
Counselor Troy's
did an amazing
mother.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, so that is very sad, and but good news though is that she will be starring in the upcoming Star Trek film because she recently finished recording all of her voiceover work for it.
So the new Star Trek movie will actually have her in it.
Exactly. Yes. Oh. Yeah. So that's good news, and in the midst of bad news, and anyway, and of course, obviously, she was married to Gene Roddenberry, who was the creator of Star Trek. So nothing else, she's involved in Star Trek very intimately that sure, way because she was married to the creator. But
well, thank you, Ben.
Yeah.
For that. Writer, go.
You know, I don't have any news today.
Oh, well, why don't you start the gift thing?
I could do a little speculation, but it's more, Apple stuff, so.
No, let's not do that.
Okay.
Why don't you give us an idea for a geek gift?
Wait, I want to hear now. You can't just say that and not talk about it.
It's Apple stuff. You want to know about Apple stuff?
I'm sure somebody out there wants to know.
All right.
Well, it's exciting for me.
Rumors. Are these rumors?
The Mac Mini that's been out for a couple of years. Yeah. It started with PowerPC, and then they switched to Intel architecture. But pretty, underpowered. it was kind of a starter thing. It didn't include a keyboard or a monitor, and it was just sort of a way to get your foot in the door in the Apple world. There's been insider leaks and technical speculation based on files that are in the latest update in the 10.5.6 that there will be a new rev of the Mac Mini along with a new iMac. And I'm kind of excited about it because they're talking about changing, they're going to boost up the memory capacity, mm-hmm. the hard drive space, possibly use the new aluminum a manufacturing method that they've been using with new MacBook Pros, so and accessing it will be a little easier.
And I wouldn't be surprised if there's NVIDIA chipset on it. So
NVIDIA chipset and the new DisplayPort technology that they've been integrating.
When the Mac Minis came out, there was a pretty easy way to, if you had a whole bunch of computers around, which I do at work, have a whole bunch of screens and a whole bunch of keyboards, it made sense to get an Intel Mac Mini because then you're not doing a whole mm-hmm. System. And I found them extremely useful. They're these very small machines I throw in anywhere. Yeah. They're easy to hide into art pieces, which is a lot of what we do. And I've really been happy with the Mac Mini.
I'm personally excited because I'm kind of on the verge of going high definition, and I want to have a digital center there. And currently, I've got an old modded Xbox that's really loud, and having a little Mac Mini, they're just really quiet. It just would be a great integral part of a home theater media center.
As long as there's supposition, what do you figure on the fate of FireWire on the Mac Mini? Do you think they'll go away with the MacBook?
I think they
won't have FireWire.
It'll probably have a USB 2 and DisplayPort.
Okay.
And
that'll be it. So assuming that comes out soon, a belated gift for you would be a Mac Mini.
Yeah, for those
tis the season,
rich in the pocket.
When is Macworld again?
It's in January.
It's January.
Which is where they're expected to announce that.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go. Let's do a couple more news stories. I think it's Miles' turn.
Yeah.
But yeah, Miles?
Will somebody have one they're burning to get through?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we should talk about the RIAA.
I agree. Sure.
They're going to stop suing music fans and instead work with ISPs to cut the subscribers' internet connections if they ignore warnings to stop.
I had my hopes up there for a second. So the RIAA...
So currently they do the subpoena, the settle, or the sue, right? And there's been some court cases. It's costing the music industry a lot of money. And so instead they're going to work with the music shares ISP... if they find that people are sharing music through their, peer-to-peer searches, the ISP will either forward the RIAA's email or send the subscriber a warning email telling them that music sharing is not permitted. If they continue to share, the subscriber then receives one or two additional warnings, and they might get their internet connection slowed down. And if the infringement persists, they might get their internet connection cut off
now, this
completely.
Is what the RIAA wants to do, wants yeah. ISPs to respond, but it could be that the ISP says, no, leave us
alone. I
don't
know. It's, and it this story be, says that it's on Wired.com that the RIAA has already reached agreements with several ISPs to do
see, that's
this.
Scary, yeah, it could also be the ISPs because, mm-hmm. I mean, this looking at history, it could also be ISPs cutting people off saying, hey, we got a letter. See ya.
Yeah. And you know, yeah, the ISP
or not
doesn't
actually infringed or not is you know
they're already you know throttling people's bandwidth, so they're going to go after the people who are using most bandwidth and not paying for it. Yeah. So to them, it's a win-win situation.
Except
right?
that I always thought that ISP, if they started looking at the kind of content you're doing on there, they're responsible for you. And if they just say you have an open pipe and you're your own boss, we're not responsible for what you do. That's always been the stance of an ISP. And once you start meddling with what people are doing, then you kind of start becoming responsible for any activity that they do.
Except
that's inappropriate.
Except the ISP wouldn't be monitoring in this case. They'd be waiting for RIAA letters.
And
but
those
at the same
letters
time,
would say,
if the ISP were going to verify...
Yeah.
They'd have to go back to their logs and check.
And the thing is, they're not going to be in a lot of threat. I mean, I can imagine that a large ISP might get a letter from RIAA saying, all these IP addresses in this window have been bad. Stop them. And so that's 50,000 people all at once that get a letter. And some of those people are not going to actually be doing anything wrong, and they'll be fighting it. I mean, it's going to be a mess. That's how I perceive it, at least, unless it goes
nice
and
slow. Or at
least
a transfer of one type of mess to another type of
yeah.
legal mess.
Well, and... yeah. All right.
You know, the RIAA has never successfully sued a single alleged file share.
Right. They always settle out of court, right?
Yeah.
That's why you keep arguing and say no, no, no. And then you finally say, I'll give you $10.
Well, you should try that out, Lyle.
Yeah, yeah.
By all means.
I don't share music illegally. Okay, so moving on. Should we move on to another news story? Sean, I know you got him. Go for it.
Yeah, probably. All right.
Well, I've got one. I'll do one. What the heck?
I mean, I do, but yeah,
okay,
go for it.
Let me do one. I want to talk about Facebook. So,
what's Facebook, Lyle?
So, 140 million users.
Is that
so
what
far.
I do? How irritating. Collect my thoughts and then, oh. Yeah, 140 million users are using Facebook, and it's growing by 600,000 a day, which mm-hmm. is insane. It surpassed earlier in the year, it surpassed MySpace as the largest social networking site. And one of the reasons, one of the arguments for the reasons of the fast growth is that the entire plan of Facebook was to be kind of a platform for developers to make new applications, new things on there. And you can tell if you've got a Facebook account because people invite you to really stupid things. There's a lot of applications out there that are using the Facebook platform, if you will. And the early attempts, I'm kind of summing a VentureBeat article, which is linked from our site now, that talks from Eric Eldon. And he talks about how, though they said the entire time their open social platform was going to be even and fair-handed from outside developers versus inside to Facebook developers, in reality, the inside Facebook developer apps have gotten a little bit of extra features. They haven't really been fair on their rules. So they've been successful in their marketing attempts to say we're going to be fair to developers, and a lot of developers have made applications, and their growth rate's extreme. But still, they're doing things with their photo sharing app that you can't do as an outside developer. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, they're being caught to some degree. I don't think it's hurting them directly. Everyone here has a Facebook account except for Sean?
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah,
yeah. Actually, it was kind of an insidious thing. I had Alex invite me to Facebook.
Yeah.
I hadn't actually accepted the invitation. Or it wasn't Alex. It was another friend of mine. And I hadn't responded. I hadn't clicked on the link
you
on the
email.
You
have never talked to Facebook about yourself.
Right. And by virtue of that person doing it, or maybe just because he said there was this other person out there, a flood of a dozen other people came in to try to add me.
Right.
Before I even did anything.
Right.
Which means that, you know, my email address was already there.
Yeah. Well, what happens on the Facebook system is you can actually update your address book, and so mm-hmm. people know about you. So if I updated my address book, people know about your email address, which is no, I'm just kidding. And and so when you know Alex did that, then the system already sent an invite
it was
to
actually
you,
Rebecca. But yeah,
yeah. In any case, I can see how that would have happened. Did I hit you hard on that? No, I don't know if we've even befriended you.
No, you've
Facebook.
Actually said like, do you have a Facebook account? What's wrong with you? What's going
yeah.
on? Aren't
well,
you
you're a college
student?
Student, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Anyway, moving on. Sean, new story. Go for it.
Microsoft issued an emergency fix for that huge browser flaw that they had. I really wish Alex were on the show. I'm sure he's got some
Wait,
unique insight into that.
Flaw? There have been so many.
It's just the zero-day vulnerability whereby criminals can take over the victim's machine simply by steering them to infected websites. So Microsoft, of course, responded really quickly to this one. And typically, they don't. They do their monthly update. This time, they did. They responded quickly.
Right, because they had a whole bunch of experts coming out saying, stop using Internet Explorer until they fix it.
Oh, yeah. It was all over NPR. So if you're out there and you're using Internet Explorer, for those of you who use it, make sure you get the update.
Yeah, do it now.
If you're ignoring Windows updates, don't. Go grab it. And or better yet, move to a better browser. Miles, what do you recommend?
You have your choice of actually quite a few, especially if you're on the Windows platform. You have Firefox, Opera, Safari, or Chrome. Google Chrome, which just recently came out.
I used Google Chrome 1.0. We talked about that last week. Mm-hmm. And the new bookmark app that's built into it, or there is now a bookmark application built into it for management. And it was actually, it's much better.
Is it as good as Firefox's?
Well, Firefox has the add-ons. It's the reason why I still use Firefox. There's the IE tab is really nice when sites won't load in Firefox. Mm-hmm. You can load it in using the IE tab add-on. There's the Flash. One of them blocks Flash ads. I forget what that's called.
Flash Block.
Yeah, Flash Block. That's great. There's Ad Blocker, which I love because I hate looking at ads on websites.
So the moral of the story is you don't need to use Internet Explorer. In fact, there are better options out there.
Yeah. And if you have a lot of bookmarks, consider Firefox and Foxmarks. You can synchronize your bookmarks between different machines. Great.
Or if you just want to move over, you can just import them entirely.
There is a beta version of Foxmarks for IE, though, to be fair.
Okay, so we were talking about whether you really should update right away or if you're okay to wait until your machine auto-updates. And I'd kind of suggest that you set up your machine to auto-update now. So is that kind of the right way to do it, or should you just wait it out?
No, do it now.
Do it now?
Yeah.
It's too dangerous?
Yes. I mean, this is an active exploit.
All right.
Absolutely do it now.
You heard it from Miles and Sean and everybody here. Go update your Internet Explorer and
or Firefox. Download another browser.
Right. All right. One more news story. No, that's not. We'll do news stories again in just a minute. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, Ryder Brooks, and Ben Jaffe. We're taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. The numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. If you'd like, you can use the internet. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. And, of course, you can participate on our forums. This is Central Coast Public Radio. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. We are taking questions with comments about technology. You can also suggest a geek gift if you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. All right, as we wait for calls to come in, let's go ahead, Ben.
Last show, a listener had a question about playing back video on the web on their Mac, and that kind of made me think about putting something together because it took me several months to kind of get my mind around exactly what was going on with video on the Mac. Usually when you can't play files, you're either running into Real Player streaming files, DivX files, or Windows Media files. And Windows Media is kind of a strange subject on OS X. So here's really quickly the history. Microsoft actually provides Windows Media components for QuickTime, so you can play Windows Media in QuickTime. And they did this so they could justify stopping development on Windows Media Player for Mac. And then a company called Flip for Mac developed a way to use Windows Media components in QuickTime, and Microsoft bought that company. So if you install Flip for Mac, it will allow much of the Windows Media encoded content to play directly in QuickTime.
And it's a free application.
Exactly. It's free, and you can download it from Microsoft's site, or probably actually easier is just doing a Google search for Flip for Mac. And you can, when you install it, you can also play back in anything like iTunes or VLC that relies on QuickTime's codecs. Here's the catch. Windows Media 10 and 11 encoded streams cannot be played back in Flip for Mac. And as far as I know, there's no way to do it on a Mac, period.
Okay,
unless you install Windows.
There is a wall.
There is a wall. So that's one of the few things that you just cannot do on a Mac. I haven't really had much issue because I don't run into Windows Media streams that are 10 or 11 all that often. But that's a choice Microsoft made. Gosh darn it. So anyway. So that's the lowdown on video on the Mac.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and start taking some calls. From Carmel, Will, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah, good morning. I hope you can help me with what seems to be a pretty complex issue. I have a Hewlett-Packard XP laptop that I have had for several years and really like. I lost my COM ports recently. This has never happened to me before. The telephone people gave me a big interview and decided that, yes, they will have to repair it, that it was a hardware issue. Mm-hmm. It came back 2 days ago from Hewlett-Packard, and I have not been able... They replaced the motherboard. They supposedly did not touch my hard drive. However, mm-hmm. my Norton Securities is nowhere to be found, so I think something got touched. And my main problem is I can't load Firefox. I can load Firefox. I can install the new Firefox, but it won't connect. I have Opera on. I didn't replace Opera. It does fine. So does Internet Explorer. But Firefox, I have tried and tried.
Have you just uninstalled it and reinstalled it?
That's what I did. Interesting. That's what I did.
But that doesn't really remove the Firefox files. What you need to do is do an uninstall, mm-hmm. and then go to your program files directory and look for Mozilla Firefox folder and delete it.
I did that.
Really?
Okay, I did that.
Is the program not
checked,
running, or you can't?
I checked the firewalls. I don't have a Norton firewall because I don't seem to have Norton components anymore. And I cleared the exception for in Microsoft Firewall for Firefox. But the error message that Firefox's console sent me yesterday all day long was failed to load XPCOM component. And then it gives this long, I guess, a location. Hmm. And today it gave me a different kind of an error message. Well, maybe it's the same thing, but it says exception component return failure code, and it gives me a long code and tells me the location.
Okay, XPCOM is part of Firefox itself.
It is.
It's
okay.
A cross-platform component object model, which makes me wonder if you have a DLL floating around like in your Windows directory. Search your system for an xpcom.dll or xpcom.dll.
Do an uninstall of Firefox, then also do a deletion of the Firefox stuff in the Mozilla folder and program files, and then look for
xpcom.dll.
Normally don't take advice about deleting DLLs. It's a very dangerous thing to do on your computer, but you can trust
this one should be safe.
Okay.
Yeah. And also, instead of delete, usually when you delete files like that, you know, don't actually delete them, but rename them to something .xpcom.dll.old or something like that.
Right.
So it just doesn't find it. The idea being
here is it's possible that your system had an earlier version of Firefox that you installed that put the DLLs in the wrong place, and it's a possibility that now you've got a kind of rogue older version.
I see. Well, I've been using Fox. I've had about three versions on this computer.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
So I'll try to uninstall it.
You might want to look for this exact error. A lot of people use Firefox, and a lot of geeks use Firefox, so it's very possible that people run into this error and they know what the trick is. So I would do a search for the exact errors you're getting and see what people say. There might be like a cleanup suggestion when Firefox uninstalls. But that's basically what's happening. Is you've got a kind of bad version of Firefox on your system, and it's not really being removed. Good luck.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Will, for the call.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And, you know, you can always send us an email. Just go to geekspeak.org.
Yeah. Even better, you could post to our forums, forums.geekspeak.org.
There you go. from Santa Cruz,
with
Timothy.
With a functional browser.
A couple of weeks ago, Leroy from Santa Cruz called, and towards the end of his call, he basically had a question of, is there a website where I can learn all this computer stuff?
And I remember that, sure.
Yeah, at first you guys said no, which I thought was a terrible answer, especially coming from, supposedly the ambassadors between the geeks and the rest of humanity. But to your credit, you did say, take a class out of Cabrillo, which is what I usually also tell people, because there's nothing better than a in-person class.
Do you know of a good website, though?
Yeah. There's for a number of years now, Berkeley has been podcasting a bunch of their classes. And I don't have the exact web address, but you can find it if you do a Google on Berkeley and podcasts. And they've got a whole bunch of classes. You can download MP3s, and you can also watch, on most of them, you can watch the streaming video.
And do they have
an introduction to computers class.
Nice.
So if you've got the time, you can watch a whole introduction to computers class. And he also asked about digital photography. I don't have a specific digital photography class, but Cabrillo does have one of those classes.
Yeah.
And if you if you even just Google a digital photography class, you'll find websites of college classes. And you might not have the podcasting, but they'll have the syllabus, they'll have required texts. I've been looking into computational photography, and I've got stuff like links to readings and PowerPoint presentations.
Timothy, it's really interesting that the online solution that you came up with is to find the actual classes and see copies of them. Because I think that's what I'm thinking as well, like a source that's a website that you would read, that's what I was trying to picture. It doesn't really do it, but I can see that a podcast or a class syllabus and get an idea of what people are reading and what people are saying about introduction to computers.
Right, I had taken the tenor of that original call that we got to be, let me look at these series of websites and I will be competent in computers.
Right.
And it's not going to be
And really it's about changing your way you do things so that you start learning, so you start training yourself to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a philosophical thing, which I think you get in college. But I agree that those are some great resources. I've heard about the Berkeley podcasting. I've never listened to and watched them. I didn't know they had Intro to Computers. That's a really good source.
And we'll Stanford has some classes now, too, with if you want to learn programming.
Right.
Yeah, as is MIT.
Yeah, more advanced stuff.
Yeah.
I've even, if you want to watch Buckminster Fuller, there's sites out there where Stanford has a huge collection of Buckminster Fuller, and there's Conversations with Bucky, where you can watch his whole 42-hour presentation he gave back in the 70s on called Everything I Know.
Yeah, that was a great series. I heard some of it. Timothy, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
I'm wondering if anybody out there knows of any recorded lectures of Richard Feynman.
I have some.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
I would love to see
wonderful stuff. I've got a CD that Sean made a while ago for me that's got something on there. By the way, Timothy mentioned that we're their ambassadors. Actually, we bridge the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity, and clearly Timothy's a geek, and we've helped him express himself. So I think we're still doing our job. Also in Santa Cruz, Michelle, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. I gave up my wonderful XP, and I'm still not sure why, but I got a Toshiba Toshiba laptop with Vista on it, and it just feels really sluggish. Everything takes so long to open, Firefox and Windows. And about a month ago, I heard you guys say something about if things are running slowly, add more memory.
Yeah.
So are you saying I just go out and buy a little memory stick and put it on there?
It's almost as simple as that.
It depends upon the laptop, depends on whether or not there's a free slot available. But on a new laptop, you probably would. And RAM is really cheap now, so.
Is that Toshiba Satellite?
Yeah, do a little research before you do that. Alternatively, you can pop it open yourself and make sure there's a free slot.
Crucial is a company that sells memory, and they have a pretty good online tool that you can just plug in your manufacturer model, and they'll tell you what it can do and what it comes stock. And they have pretty competitive prices online on their site.
Okay, now I also remember you saying there was one other thing that you could do besides add memory, and I don't remember what that was. Do you have any other ideas as to what else could be added besides memory?
You have a laptop, so part of the
Toshiba Satellite,
right? And that's a laptop, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So part of the thing the laptop comes with is a slower hard drive, and that's just because they're trying to conserve space or conserve battery life. So it's kind of a trade-off between a faster machine and longer battery life. And if you don't care about the battery life at all, you could get a larger hard drive. But getting a hard drive on a laptop is kind of a pain because to get your old data transfer to the new one, you have to have some tools and you have to have some an enclosure that will play.
That and you'll have lower battery time.
And often and it'll void your warranty.
And what we mean by a faster hard drive is some usually the stock ones come, I think it's like 4,500 RPM.
5,400.
5,400 is actually
kind of
standard.
No, 4,200.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. There's a
It goes up to 5,200 and then
7,200.
It's 7,200.
4,200.
If you really don't have any qualms about battery life, if you use it at home mostly plugged in, go for a 7,200 RPM drive, and that will perk things up a bit.
But I wouldn't recommend you taking a new laptop and getting a new hard drive because it's not going to be the kind of performance that you would, and you've got a trade off. I wouldn't.
So you're running Vista. How much memory do you have right now? Do you know?
I can't say no.
Okay, if you have 1 gig of memory, definitely add another gig. If you only have one slot, get rid of that 1 gig piece of memory and put a 2 gig piece of memory in there.
Yeah, and the 2 gig, well, if it's Vista 64.
I think it is two gigs. I think it is 2 gigs.
Then you might be already maxed out.
If you're running Vista 32, then if you put a 4 gig stick in there, that's going to be expensive. You would only take advantage of 3 gigs because you need Vista 64 to take advantage of 4 gigs or more.
And unless you're running a lot of applications concurrently, it's probably not your problem why it's not peppy.
I wouldn't be surprised if what your problem actually is a whole bunch of applications running on your system, like a virus scanner.
If you go to your start menu, go to run and type msconfig.
That's msconf. Wait, config. Yeah.
So
we just had the worst speller trying to tell you how to spell it. That was awesome.
So bad as I started. Wait a second. I don't know how to do that.
So run msconfig, and that'll bring up a little dialog box that is the system configuration utility, and there's a startup tab, and that tells you everything that your notebook's running. Now, a lot of that stuff you will want to run because notebooks have lots of specialized keys, and even the touchpad requires drivers. So if you disable it here, they won't work anymore. So be careful what you disable on a notebook. On a desktop, you can pretty much disable everything and you're fine. Like if you've got Acrobat, there's going to be an Acrobat loader.
Oh, yeah. You don't have to run that. You're basically telling a computer, should I start this stuff up in the beginning? But can't you just...
It'll make your boot faster and it'll make more memory available to Windows because these applications are not running in the background.
Sean, can Michelle just turn those applications off and see if her system still runs? Or do you have to disable and then restart?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the worst thing that would happen is your touchpad doesn't work.
Right.
You'd have to plug in an external mouse.
You might want to have an extra mouse laying around to do this. But what he's saying is just basically start turning some things off and then restart your system, and then those applications won't start. And some of those applications are actually using a lot of resources of your machine, and they will cause it to be sluggish. Yeah. But some of them are virus protection, and you kind of want that. So you're dealing with whether you want to have high performance or not. When did you buy your new machine?
A few months ago.
Okay.
Yeah, the really insidious thing is laptop manufacturers often load their laptops down with a bunch of software that you don't need.
Because they get kickbacks from the companies that actually make the software.
So this is a great way to get rid of that software. I mean, not necessarily get rid of it. It's still there. It's just not running in the background all the time because you're not using it.
But things like virus protection and Acrobat, I want them to be there. I mean, I use those things.
Yeah.
I definitely use Adobe Acrobat.
It's kind of a thing that loads up the beginning of your like when you first boot up your system, and it uses resources to make it so when you launch Acrobat, it'll launch faster.
Yeah.
But it's almost worth not even running the first time because if you happen to be doing a web browsing session, you don't use open up Acrobat or something like that.
Disabling the Acrobat startup item in the configuration utility will just make Acrobat load a little slower.
The first time, basically.
I can still open my PDF.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead and disable it. In fact, my Adobe's one product that I hate is Acrobat. It's sluggish, it's clunky, it's big. And the reason why they're making you start it up in the beginning is so they don't think that it's them. That you don't think it's them that's causing the sluggishness. Okay. In reality, it is.
Antivirus takes up a lot of system resources. So, you are running that and you feel protected. But keep in mind that a lot of your system resources are being used by antivirus. And when it's doing a scan, some of these applications take 20 to 40% of your CPU.
Yeah.
When they're running in the background. And on a notebook, that's a lot of resources.
So this is the difficult thing is the geeks, you know, pretty much all of us don't have virus protection going on all the time because we're conscious of what we do and we're being careful and we're updating
our
machine.
And some of us have Macs.
And some of us have Macs, we don't have to worry about it. But the idea being that if you do decide to disable it to get better performance, be conscious when you're doing that. So if you know you're going to go on and edit some video, go ahead and unplug from the internet. Turn it off, start up your machine. You can actually turn off the virus stuff by just using the system tray in the bottom right, even after your machine is started up. Then your machine will be a lot faster, and you don't have any vectors in your computer. I mean, no ways for viruses to get in at that point, so it's okay to turn it off. But then you have to be really conscious about it. So it's a trade-off.
You know, and there's another thing we haven't discussed here just briefly, is that if you're not very stuck on the whole Vista appearance and theme, you can also kind of dial back some of the visual settings on your laptop so it looks more like XP used to look. It's kind of generic. And that might actually help your performance a little bit.
Where do you change that?
You know, in Vista, I don't really know. It sits under the control panel. Yeah. Visualization.
Right-click on the desktop and go to properties.
God, you know, I feel
desktop
like
desktop personalizations.
Yeah, display
like
settings.
We're making her drink from the fire hose.
I know. You know what? Okay. So, Michelle, here's the great thing.
Just throwing out
later today, around 6 o'clock or so, I'm going to put the podcast up, and then NPR will grab it. And so by tomorrow, the podcast of the show will be up. Go ahead and download the MP3, and you can listen back to what we're saying, because I know we're giving you a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the call.
Yeah, I just want to go.
Thank you. I really appreciate your help.
Right. I want to go a little further, though. Do a little geek speak. And you could, through MS Config, you can not only disable startup items, but you can also disable services. And services take up a lot of resources, too. So if you click on the services tab, at the very bottom, there's a little checkbox that says hide all Microsoft services.
Wow.
And then that will show you all of the services from third-party applications that are running on your computer. Those take up a lot of resources, too. And you need to be a little savvy about what you do. And you know what? You can just do Google searches on each of these services, and they will tell you what they're doing. And you can decide for yourself if you want them to run on your computer.
Bottom line, though, I think she was right on the money, though. She was looking at getting more RAM, and I think that's the way to go.
And if your machine with Vista 32-bit is going to max out at 3 gigs, and your 64 maxes out, what, 8 gigs?
No, it goes far beyond that.
Oh, way
but
beyond
your systems,
that.
But yeah, you can fill your system up with how much memory you want.
And you can also modify your swap file settings. So
that's another
do a little research on that. Vista, search for Vista swap file. If you, right now it's dynamically allocated, you can actually set it to be double your RAM size, and you'll get more performance that way, too.
So it might sound like you're drinking from a fire hose listening to Geek Speak, but keep in mind that when Sean starts talking to this, we all are. Because the truth is, when I want to tune my system, I invite Sean over and I give him some scotch and I say, Sean, help me out here. So,
a little scotch and a cigar goes a long way.
It's amazing, isn't it? Let's take one last call and we'll talk about geek gifts. Anna from Santa Cruz, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi there.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I'm kind of in the mode of where Michelle just was as far as Vista versus XP, and I'm interested in a new laptop, and I've heard so much bad feedback about the Vista that I'm kind of wanting to stay in the XP world. So two questions that go with this are, I've heard that Microsoft has done some things lately to disallow putting XP on a Vista system, and I'm curious if there's any truth to that.
No. Go on.
Okay. So you could just buy a Vista machine, put XP on, get rid of Vista.
Yeah. It's going to be expensive, and it's going to be time-consuming, and it's going to be a pain, and I wouldn't suggest it. What's your second question?
Wondering how long, and I know that this is just a guess on your part, but how long XP will be supported? Is that a wise?
I think we announced that they're going to stop support.
Yeah,
they already did.
I think you should go ahead and go with Vista, and I say that with a little bit of trepidation.
That's right.
But
you can't
general,
buy it on the store shelf right
in
now.
In general, you're going to have your system. It's going to be pre-installed. The trick about this is that for a while, in the very early days, Sean has this great email that he sent us talking about why Vista didn't launch really well, but. One of the things is that the earlier machines didn't actually have enough strength to run Vista, even though they said they were. And so that caused a lot of early-level adoption of frustration. Right now, if you buy a Vista machine, you're going to be okay. I don't think that's really going to be a big issue. And eventually, you're going to have to deal with it. So if you're buying a new machine now, just deal with it. And keep in mind, people's trepidation has to do with change, which is scary.
Right. Speaking of change, if you're looking at buying a new laptop, it depends on what you're going to be doing with it. If you have a lot of programs that you need to transfer over, stick with that. Go with the Vista. Mm-hmm. If you don't, maybe you want to take a look at a Mac.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good point. Thank you.
But if you're getting a PC, don't be scared by Vista.
Yeah.
I would not buy a notebook with XP.
I wouldn't get an XP machine.
Just, well, personally, Microsoft just announced that they're going to be increasing the prices for buying XP over Vista, like a $150 premium.
Yeah. I wouldn't do it. I don't think it's a good idea.
I would go with Vista 64 and at least 2 gigs of memory, but probably 4.
And that's a good geek gift recommendation. Thank you so much, Anna, for the call.
And also make sure, I wouldn't buy a consumer laptop.
Buy a business
class. I would buy a business. They're just made better.
Yep.
Pay attention to features and graphics on the notebook. Do a little research. But, and something people should know is that on May 31st, is that right?
Somewhere around there.
No, forget it.
Okay. Let's start doing some geek gifts.
Yeah.
Ryder, we teased earlier about a geek gift, but actually did some news. So what's the geek gift?
I have several, but top of my list is affordable. It's about $50, $60. It's a Logitech VX Nano cordless laser mouse for notebooks. And it's a slightly smaller mouse. It's laser, so it doesn't have the red beam, so you can't see it, but it's not a trackball. I don't think they sell those anymore.
Is it Bluetooth enabled or dongle?
No, it's a dongle. It's like 2.4 gigahertz, uh-huh. But a nice feature about it is it's really, really small. It's like the size of a nickel, including the jack. So it's like a quarter of an inch sticking out of your laptop.
That's the one thing I don't like about the dongles. They always stick out too far, and you're going to break them. But this one is really short.
So this one's nice, and it's got their new mouse wheel, which has, if you click on it, it has a mechanical switch where it can switch between a click as you scroll, or like a really it's like metal weighted, so it'll spin for a really long time. So if you want to,
interesting, just kind of flick it
and it'll just keep spinning, which is a really nice feature.
When you click it, you're actually swapping it to be different physical attribute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay. Cool. So good. That's a good geek gift.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and do one. I think of a service. I've had AT&T for a while, and with that AT&T account, I got a free Flickr Pro account, which was really cool because I could put images up and share them with people. And unfortunately, AT&T and Yahoo and Flickr, whatever, stopped doing that connection, so now I have to actually buy it. And for the first time, I'm actually thinking I'm going to buy a web service because I think Flickr is a pretty good service. And this is Flickr.com. It's the word Flickr, but without the ending E before the R. And it allows you to share images. There's a lot of different services out there. I just happen to like the interface quite a bit. I wish it did some more things, but in general, I'm happy with it. Normally, I'm not very happy with web services. So that's my suggestion. Somebody can buy me a Flickr account. Miles?
Yeah, it's on the pricey end, but if you're looking for that, I mean, because we're going to a range here.
Well, no, Flickr account is like $30
a
year.
No.
Oh, your gift.
Mine
go
is on the more pricey end. Mm-hmm. It's a time capsule. If someone has a Mac at home, and if they're a normal user, which is they don't do backups, you know who you are. The great thing about the time capsule is you get it, you plug it in, you set it up, and you don't have to do anything.
Right.
It just, your system gets backed up on a regular basis. If you have a laptop, when you walk in the door of your home and turn on your laptop to go browse the web, it's doing a backup.
Right.
Like it's painless, thoughtless.
I've been using the application, what's it called? The actual application? Time Machine.
Time Machine.
I've been using Time Machine for a while for an external, and I love it. And it's because, all I have to do is plug it in. But, of course, with the Time Machine thing, you don't even have to plug in because it's wireless. It just starts dealing the backup. And at some point, anytime I want to click up to the upper right-hand corner and see when my last backup was, and I feel safe, because I've got a second copy. We're talking about backup. We're talking about a second copy, not an archive, meaning you've got a copy. You only have one copy. So a backup is two copies at least. One on your machine, one on a hard drive. And so Time Machine, good suggestion. It is a little pricey.
Or Time Capsule.
Time Capsule, excuse me. Ben?
Some cheap, awesome geek gifts are XKCD t-shirts. XKCD is a webcomic of romance, sarcasm, math, and language, as it states on the site. And it's absolutely, you have to go check out those comics, everyone who's listening.
Hilarious.
Put a link up for us.
Okay. Yeah. But anyway, these shirts are extremely wonderful and geeky and witty, and I got myself 3. And all I'm going to be wearing them around.
I kind of like the Intel SSD solid-state hard drive. Very expensive, though.
That's very expensive.
But, 512 meg one.
The speed's incredible. And there's faster ones to come out. Bigger ones coming out. She was launching a big one, but we don't know what the price is going to be. I don't think they'll come down as quick as we want them.
We're going to fit in one more geek gift, but first I want to let you know that Geek Speak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. Broadcasting HD radio on 88.9 FM. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Arturo, online at kosp.org. Next week's Geek Speak, we're going to be talking about future technology. Well, the technology we've thought about for the, excuse me, in this last year, what the cool technology is kind of a year-end wrap-up.
And also talk about what's coming next year, possibly.
That's definitely true. Ryder, next gift idea. You've got a minute and 15 seconds.
Sure. Anybody that has a Netflix account, I'd recommend, and a high bandwidth internet connection, I would recommend the Roku Netflix player, which is a little black box that you put on your TV, and it bypasses the need for the Watch Now streaming videos that Netflix offers. It bypasses the need for you to have a computer. So you just hook it up to your TV and connect it to your broadband connection, and it will show you the top 10 items in your Watch Now queue of Netflix. It's about $100. It's called Roku.
Very cool. 45 seconds, Miles.
And if you just want some stocking stuffers, go to Google and type in Geek Gifts. It's going to come up with a bunch of sites that just have little knickknacks, little toys, little things like that that are perfect for the quick little $20 item that you want to give to that geek in your life.
Something else is cool is illuminated keyboards.
Oh,
so Logitech and Cytec both make them, the G15, and Cytec has the Eclipse. Really cool, especially in low-light environments. I love mine.
For KOSP and for GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxel. We'll be here next week with a technology wrap-up show. Thanks for listening to GeekSpeak. The geeks today were Miles Elam, Ryder Brooks, Ben Jaffe, Sean Cleveland. I'm Lyle Troxel. See you next week.